All right, here we go. This is 9:26. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza,
pizza. Maybe you should quit acting like a bitch.
Big O! Showtime!
So you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy-duddies that'll lick it bad. But the strong men could direct the DLNTS.org. And I see challenges at linuxtech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 926, not 826, of the Linuxling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy October.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
And Joe will be rolling back in here soon, if his internet is still up, I guess. If not, I guess he'll be on his Plumble or
whatever.
Yeah,
he said it wasn't going to be out until midnight, I think.
Oh, there we go. Just a little update on tech support thing I've been talking about the past couple of weeks. No resolution yet. We actually had a video call because it got a little crazy going back and forth. And it's just like they keep repeating the same things, and we keep saying it's not going to fix the problem. This is the problem. And we had a video call, and we said, I felt terrible. Like, they kept, it kept going on around in this circle. And eventually I'm like, look, that's not it. There's a bug in your problem. There's a bug in your something here. This is what's happening. And the guy stammered a little bit. I thought he was going to cry. He felt all whatever. I don't know what. But what it ultimately, like, what it kind of came down to is they said the quiet part out loud. They're like, yeah, this problem's probably not big enough for us to fix. So you're just going to have to, like, mitigate it. And because it's the thing is with this problem is that given the volume of messages that get processed, and we're talking like thousands an hour, probably even more than that, you know, it depends, maybe even close to 10,000 an hour. We're talking like one or two, maybe three messages in a period that may or may not happen in a given day. Right. So hundreds of thousands of messages, we're talking about just a few, and it's across three different functions, but it's enough to cause a problem and a concern. Cause right now it's more or less, you got to wait 10 minutes instead of having it process in a few seconds. We have to wait 10 minutes. Now their proposal is, why don't we reduce that 10-minute wait? And that's fine. It doesn't solve the problem. One of the issues that we have is, yeah, we can lower that 10-minute wait, but we like to adhere to our infrastructure documented in code. And the way that you deploy the function automatically creates a subscription, and there is no option in the deployment of the function to adjust those values. So we would have to go into the UI and manually adjust it, and that kind of violates our philosophy, but we could do it, right? It's not that big of a deal. Still, it doesn't solve the problem. Like, there is a problem that they have that it mitigates it a little bit, but the problem's still there. And it makes it difficult for us to do proper alerting and avoid a retry loop. Now, and I think I had mentioned this before, their suggestion for mitigating a retry loop, and what that means is the function by default will try immediately if it fails. So if your function fails, it's going to resend the message. And it's going to keep doing that for 7 days. So if you have a bug or a problem and you don't properly mitigate errors, that retry function is just going to keep happening for 7 days. And then theoretically, if enough of them are doing it, you can incur a higher cost, and you don't want to do that. So the recommendation in their documentation is to look at the published time of the message, and if it exceeds a certain time, log that as an error and then call back or successfully exit the function. That way, the function will then be acknowledging the message and it won't get resent. So ideally, like, I even think a minute and 30 seconds is a little excessive, given that 99% of these messages complete within 1 to 5 seconds, less than 10 seconds, but a minute and 30, that should be fine. Still, we have these outliers here that are 10 minutes. So, I decided the best thing to do is, instead of when you pick up the message, looking at when it was published and seeing how old it is and discarding it if it's too old, is to take that message and run it through the function. And if it errors, look at that. And if it is a message that is older than a minute and 30 seconds, write that out to the log and then exit the function successfully. Otherwise, throw an error and have it repeat. So it doesn't, like, we still run that risk if it's a 10-minute message and it comes in and it errors out, then it's going to have to be logged and it would be missed. But it's the best option that we have right now. But that's where I'm at with that. I did go out and I posted on forums to check, solicit other people to see if people who are using a trigger-based function are seeing the same thing that we are. I would be surprised if they are not, given that we're not doing anything special and we have 3 different functions that are doing it. Unfortunately, I have not been able to find anybody else in our own organization that is doing this. So I have to reach out beyond our group. And that's where that is. Excitement as well as Joel, you're back?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. So there we are. Still haven't had a resolution to Runkeeper. I did see people are posting, and this one person was like, I contacted support, and support said to, until they get a fix out, or I don't know when that's going to happen, because this was a report back in, I think, the end of September, and we're almost halfway through October already. They said to turn off the auto pause on the application, and my auto pause is off. It is still not working, so I think I'm going to reach out to their support, like apparently everybody else is being told to do, and see what they have to say. But it's a little disappointing. I'm not getting the GPS track, but here we go. What else is new? What else is new with you guys?
Well, today, during a really boring, really long meeting, I decided to fix a pair of headphones.
So, there you go.
This isn't my normal type of electronics fix. It was just all plastic that needed fixing, and I added a couple of washers to the screws to help hold in the broken plastic, and used some epoxy around the broken plastic to build it back up. And then I went and looked up the price of this, a Blue Parrot B450 XT. And it's like $160 pair of headphones. mono, but still.
Nice.
So, it looks good. I mean, and it works. And I think I'm going to paint the epoxy on it and give it to my son as a Christmas present because I really don't have much of a use for it.
Well, that's cool. Mm.
I've also been playing with my Raspberry Pi again and got Berry Boot set up on it and added a whole bunch of operating systems again. Except this time I did it on one of the 1 terabyte drives that I had picked up, so there's plenty of space to work with. And got RetroPie all set up. I had to download that for the Pi 4 and then use a conversion tool to convert it to Squash FS so that Berry Boot would see it. That was interesting. And then I got it all set up and I'm still having some trouble with some of the Neo Geo games. So I guess I have to find a different BIOS. And then I got Manjaro set up on it. I need to do some more with that. And then I think eventually I'm going to delete all of the RetroPie games I have on there and try and set that up over SSHFS with using an auto mount and shared keys so I don't have to worry about passwords.
Yep.
So the FS tab set up for SSHFS. I haven't done the FS tab for SSHFS before. I've used other methods to auto mount, but
right.
I'm gonna do not gonna use the method that I used before, which was based on network connection on one of my tablets, since this is always going to have an Ethernet connection on it.
Nice.
And, you know, I've got the usual on there. I got Raspbian on there, but I haven't done anything with it yet. And, well, Raspberry Pi OS now, I guess. And Ubuntu, I believe it's 2010 on there. So I'll probably have to go through some upgrading on that.
Yep, that's almost a year out of date, considering 2110 comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, but that's what Berry Boot, that's the image that they were offering, and it's a whole lot easier right. Just to grab their image and update it than it is to find another image for Ubuntu and then convert it and then probably still have to update it anyway.
Right. So let's see. 2110 is the next your standard Ubuntu release, and the next release 2204 is the next LTS release. And it's the 25th Ubuntu release since 2004. So.
Cool.
And I've got, technically, I'll swap back and forth. I have both the KDE loaded as well as the regular GNOME desktop that Ubuntu uses. Lately, I've been using the Kubuntu mostly. I did upgrade to 2110 this afternoon. And I'm trying to see what is really all that different. KDE Plasma Desktop 5.22 is on 2110.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking at. Yeah. Yeah, it to me right now it's I'll flip back and forth. I like GNOME that's on the regular Ubuntu, but of course Ubuntu has their own skin on it. But it's really not that much different.
What are they running? 3.38?
I don't think. Let me see if the release notes say what version they're on now. Let's see.
Because 40 was nice, and I know they're up to 41 now.
Yeah. Yeah, GNOME 40.
Yeah, 40's good.
Yeah. Not the latest 41, but And the code name is Impish Indiri, whatever Indiris are. Or Indri. I mean, Impish Indri. So. But, you know, the upgrade, we went very smoothly. Let's see. For the straight up Ubuntu 2110, GNOME 40 desktop by default, Yaru Lite theme by default, Firefox is now being delivered via Snap instead of Debs. ZSTD compression for packages. Wayland is now enabled for NVIDIA driver users. And it's supposed to have multi-touch gestures. And the Linux 5.13 kernel and updated theme and icons. So doesn't really sound like a huge release. And I didn't use the installer, although I've got the ISOs. I might try doing a virtual machine before too much longer, just so I can see what the installer. But the installer is being developed. A new installer is being developed by alongside 2110. New utility is built using Google's Flutter SDK, and boasts a cleaner design than the current Ubuntu installer. Which I don't know how you can get cleaner than Ubiquiti, but. So we'll see. It says it's not clear whether the new installer will be made default. So it may have the regular Ubiquiti installer. So, but it's just such a non-event, though. I mean, it's not like I've in a long time. It's been a long time since I've had an Ubuntu system break, going from one release to the next. As in, like, I would say at least a decade. What do you think there, Dan? Of course, you don't use Ubuntu much anymore, do you?
No, I have an Ubuntu machine right here.
Oh, okay.
I use it every week. I've been upgrading this one for I don't know how long now.
Right.
It's been.
And this is the first upgrade I've done on this particular machine, but that's only because I just freshly installed it, like, right around the time we moved in. So
okay,
yeah. So I mean, I started with straight up Ubuntu, then I installed the Kubuntu desktop packages so I can go over into KDE Plasma and. Really, that's it. I mean, that and I installed Mumble and I installed Hexchat for IRC, and I also installed the Chrome. So I mean, that's it. I mean, I don't install a lot of stuff on my Linux boxes anymore because the default desktop has pretty much everything I need.
And that's a good thing.
Yep, certainly. I probably should buckle down though and install like Cura on there or SLC3R or Slicer, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, is that for 3D printing?
Yeah, there's that one, and then there's also Prusa has taken that one and made modifications that they use with Slicer. I think Slicer is technically true open source, where Cura, I think Cura is open source too, but. But Cura is mostly developed by the Ultimaker folks. And Dan, I've been looking at the resin printers have been coming down in cost, man.
Like, how much are they?
Elegoo Mars is like right around 250, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less there. And they also have like a curing station for the because when you're finished with the resin print, you have to cure it with UV light. So you have a couple options. You can stick it like out in the sun if you have a lot of sun where you're at, which, you know, we're getting towards a time of year where I don't have a lot of sun. But then they have a machine where basically it'll rotate your model around a set of UV lights that'll help it cure. And if you don't wash the resin off and cure it, then it won't, you know, it'll basically be kind of mushy.
Sounds like you're getting your nails done. Got to do like the same thing.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, some people use those. Actually, holy cow. Hold on a second. Elegoo Mars UV. This is the photo. This is photo curing LCD MSLA 3D printer. Actually, let me flip it over to US. $150
for the printer.
Yeah,
you got to build it yourself.
Nope.
Comes fully assembled.
Yeah, there's not much. There's not much to put together on most resin printers.
That's like cheaper than a regular, like an inkjet printer.
Depends on what kind of printer. Like, you know, you mentioned printers, and the wife has been thinking about getting one because we have when you're a member of Sam's Club, like you have the Sam's Club Plus membership,
right?
You get points, you know, throughout the year, and then like about 2 months before your membership needs to be re-upped, they give you a credit. This year we got like $123. So she started thinking about a printer, but I look, the ones I'm looking at, like they have one laser printer, which is $150, and I think it's a Canon. You know, but I wanted to look more at it because, like, if I'm buying a laser printer, I want to make sure that laser printer, it can do double-sided printing for one, if possible. Because I think our inkjet will do that. If you really push gun to shove, you can make it do that. But where it'll automatically flip to paper for you. But but the more and more I look at it. Another thing, too, is I want to make sure that we can print to it from anywhere in the house. So I'm really looking for one with a Wi-Fi on it, or at the very least Ethernet. And she's like, well, I want to stick it in my office. I'm like, you don't want to just stick it in like a community place where we can all use it? You know? And I said, besides your wallet, she's got so much stuff in her office downstairs. It's like not funny. But of course, I got a lot of stuff up here too, but at least I have the room for it. Yeah, I have downloaded the only other thing with resin printing, though, is you use a different slicer. You can't, Cura is not usually the slicer you use. You use one called Chitubox.
Chitubox.
It sounds like that, right? Almost spelled like that too. Chitubox. It's a thing you say. Chitubox, I think, because it's from China. So, but that's how it will do the slicing for you of your model. And the other thing, too, is it'll help put the supports in for you. And the supports, how you support models are different with the resin printer, because you're usually printing upside down. In a normal FDM, you print from the bottom up. And it's still done that way, but because resin printing is different, it actually hangs the print upside down. And what it'll do is it'll lower the platform in into the goo, then it shoots the photo laser. It's either laser or just a light. It can be like a light through an LCD. And that causes the layer of resin to harden onto the bottom of the build plate. So then it it rises up out of the goo, then lowers back into the goo, and so on and so forth. It actually takes a lot longer, but then you're also talking about a lot more layers too, because you have a much higher resolution. Like, if you want to print miniatures, that's probably the best kind of printer to get is the resin printer. In fact, a friend of mine at work, he is heavy into that Warhammer stuff, Warhammer 40K, which I think our good old friend Fad from the old Linux Outlaws used to be into that quite a bit. And right. If you buy all those miniatures, they're expensive. So he said he's going to buy this resin printer just so that he doesn't have to, so that he can use it to save money on Warhammer stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've heard of people, though, you can make a ring in there and actually have like an engraving on the inside of the ring and things of that nature. Just a lot more finer grained things. And even smaller things.
You just have to turn the resolution way up and use a... well, if you're doing really, really fine work, then you use a smaller nozzle.
Yep. Well, you can do that for FDM, yeah. But
yeah. Well, yeah, for FDM. But it just takes a lot longer.
Oh, yeah. The other thing, too, with them is... just the odors are much worse with the resin printer because it usually doesn't smell very good. It's like a common FDM printer kind of smells a little bit like French fries when you got it going.
Does it make you hungry then?
No.
It'll make me hungry if it smells like freaking French fries.
I had that for dinner in my air fryer and some burgers on our pit balls. And I had them on a pretzel bun, too. Mm.
Yeah, I bought stuff to make myself burgers tomorrow.
Yay. What kind of meat?
Cow.
Oh, so nothing fancy.
Well, it will be. I mean, it's what I think 93%.
Okay, fairly lean.
Yeah, pretty lean. And then I'm gonna chop up some mushrooms and some cauliflower rice, and mix it all together. Make burger that way with a little bit of egg white.
See, at Sam's Club, I found the... I'm trying to see who made it, but they had this seasoning for putting on your hamburgers called...
salt?
Like, I think... No. It didn't have just salt in it. It did have salt, but they call it... I think they either call it Burger Bomb or Flavor Bomb. I think Flavor Bomb.
Okay.
That's what I've been putting on the burgers when I put them on the grill. But I actually tried it with my wife has, or we actually can get these steaks. Basically, it's for making cheesesteaks out of at Sam's Club. They call it Steakies, I think. And it's actually like a chopped up ribeye kind of formed into a little frozen. It kind of a steak-shaped wedge, but when you cook it, it kind of falls apart. So it's good meat. But I tried that same spice on it on that, and man, is that good.
I've also been making more protein bars, but I got a couple of new recipes for it. There's this one that basically tastes like strawberry shortcake that is really awesome. Mm. I'm still tweaking it a little bit. It's made with a base of pumpkin puree. So it's actually really good.
Okay. Yeah, it's Weber Flavor Bomb Burger Seasoning. So it's made by Weber. And see, what does it have in it? Try and see if it says. Yeah, it doesn't really tell you what the spice mix is.
Salt, oh, MSG.
Yeah. I think it's got, it might have some, looks like it might have like some paprika in it. Oh, here, let me see. Sea salt. It does have some sugar in it, brown sugar. Tomato powder, dried onion, garlic powder, spices, whatever spices is, mustard, dried green bell pepper, yeast extract, which that's probably just to help everything flow a little bit better, dried jalapeno, it's got and a caking agent in there, dried green onion, natural flavor, and natural smoke flavor. So all I know is it tastes good.
You know, that's one thing I've never seen in the store, and I've always wanted to buy, and I just haven't bought it online, is tomato powder.
Right? Or, yeah, actually, you know what? That would be kind of cool to experiment with.
Yeah.
Or making your own. Yeah.
What's that, Joe?
I haven't seen it. Now, I would have to ask, with it being tomato powder, does, if you add a little bit of water, does it like turn into tomato paste?
I've never used it. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm my assumption is, I've gotten a spice mix, like I got this spice mix that like of the month thing that my mother-in-law got me for Christmas one year, and it was pretty cool. And they had this one was like a barbecue.
Right.
It was like a barbecue sauce almost flavored, and it was sweet, and it kind of was like a sweeter Doritos kind of thing. And I'm wondering if Doritos and this thing had tomato powder in it, because I could never find like any of the spices that I've ever used. Never
Amazon.com.
Well, yeah, but I've never had
seasoning?
That tomato-y kind of flavor to it. Yeah, I've seen tomato powder on Amazon.
Right.
I just never seen it in the stores. So you can get tomato powder. It depends on a 1 pound pack of one for $10.45, or 8 ounces for $6.99.
I bet you, if you were making a pasta salad and just hit the pasta salad with some of that, in addition to putting your tomato on it, you know. I bet you that would be pretty awesome.
You know, I'm gonna when I get paid tomorrow, I'm gonna order it. Some tomato powder.
Cause I could see you using that in a whole lot of different things. I mean,
watch it taste like shit.
Yeah, probably.
That's not at all what I expected.
Well, it's like one of the guys at work. He's trying to lower his coffee consumption. So you bought this stuff called mud water.
I've heard ads for that. Yes, yeah. I don't know why.
He just got it, and he had his first cup this morning, and he said it tastes like dirty mushrooms.
Dirty mushrooms.
Because I think it's what it's made out of too, and it has a little bit of caffeine in it, but not a lot, you know. But I'm like, yeah. I'll stick to my coffee.
If you're gonna torture yourself, why not just drink decaf?
Really? Or half and half, you know, or something like that. But you know,
Dial it back slow.
Yeah. It's still.
Instead of having the whole pot, have half a pot.
Now the same company does make like a non-dairy creamer powder for your coffee that's keto. So it has like, I think it has like a coconut powder and
So it has as much fiber as it has sugar. Zero net carbs.
Oh, black?
For what? The tomato powder?
No, the creamer he's talking about.
Oh. What is that beep?
That's his microphone. Mm.
Weird. Is it still beeping?
Nope. You're good now.
Okay, I don't know what that was. Maybe my phone was hitting the 4G or something.
Maybe.
I didn't know. But yeah, I bet you like take a tomato powder and mix it with a little garlic powder and oregano or something like that, and you can probably put that on like popcorn or something. That would be pretty tasty.
Oh, make homemade pizza. It sounds delicious.
Or that. Ooh. Take, like, when you're making a homemade pizza, take a sprinkling of that over top the pepperoni and the cheese.
Mm. Yeah.
That could be tasty.
Oh, I found some really low-calorie apple pie filling. It's actually fairly decent. I think I need to add a bit more cinnamon to it or maybe some nutmeg. And then I picked up some graham crackers. So
there
I'm
going to
give that a try. Sprinkle the graham crackers over top. Crumble them up real good. See how
you
it is.
You mentioned graham crackers. Now, when we used to do this like when we were like when all we had left in the cupboard was graham crackers and we didn't have any cereal in the morning, but we had graham crackers and milk. So we crumble up the graham crackers into a bowl and then pour milk over it.
Did it work? I would think that they get soggy really fast.
They do, but it's yeah, it did work, but I guess
they have a whole cereal that, you know, tries to mimic that.
Yeah, Golden Grahams, which is, yeah, I don't really like Golden Grahams that much.
What? Oh my God! How could you? I love Golden Grahams, man. How could you like graham crackers but not Golden Grahams?
Maybe it's the honey coating they put on them. Okay. I don't know. It's like just the plain graham crackers are pretty tasty to me. And you can get those graham crackers that have the cinnamon on one side, cinnamon sugar on the one side. Those are good too. But it's just, I don't know. That's not my favorite. Like my favorite cereal. I don't really know if I have a favorite now. I guess the closest it would be is like if I have leftover Chex from Chex Mix, because it's almost that season, man, where I start making it, and so that's okay. Any of the Chex flavors, and
no, Apple Jacks is best.
It's okay. It's sticky sweet. Quaker makes the oat squares. Those are good too.
My wife's favorite cereal is Chex, and
really?
we picked up some corn Chex. Weeks ago. They have like blueberry Chex now. I didn't try
that.
Yeah,
they do. I bet that'd be pretty good.
I love me some Apple Jacks. Probably one of my favorite cereals is comes in the big bag, the Malto Meal. It's Malto Meal s'mores. It's like take Golden Grahams and mushrooms and Cocoa Puffs and put them all together.
Right?
Not mushrooms,
yeah.
Marshmallows. It is so good. It's terrible. It's terribly addicting. I was told not to let it in the house again for a while because it's too addicting.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch is delicious too.
I like cinnamon. I like cinnamon cereals. Nobody else in my family likes cinnamon cereals.
Which reminds me of Snickerdoodles.
Yes.
Which are Snickerdoodles. I don't think that's not really a PA thing, is it? I don't know. My mom always made them, but
You know what? I have no idea because
I think it's just a North thing.
Yeah, I would say because when I grew up, we had Snickerdoodles, and I don't really see them anywhere else, so I don't know
right,
if it's anything.
Snickerdoodles and Brown-Eyed Susans. I don't think I've seen those since I came south.
What about Black Bottom Cupcakes?
I don't know about Black Bottom Cupcakes at all.
What are those?
They're essentially like dark chocolatey cupcake with cream cheese in them. It's almost like you take cheesecake and put it into a cupcake.
Kind of like it sounds a little bit like diabetes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it's good for you. I'm just saying it tastes.
They're
really
delicious,
good.
Right?
But that was one thing that I know I've never seen anywhere else but up north either.
And I will say, my mom would make gobs, which I think is the Pennsylvania term for whoopie pies.
None of those are familiar.
What? What is it? Gobs?
Yeah.
Whoopie pie? What is a whoopie pie? Is that?
It's basically two cake-like cookies with, a cream in the middle of them.
Okay, yeah. All right, that's what I thought it was.
Homemade Oreos? Right.
No. They're much softer than an Oreo.
You know, you can find them probably from Do you get little Debbie's down there, Joe?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you look at the little Debbie section, you'll see something like it. It's not okay. What's the other one? The one with
oatmeal cream pie?
Oatmeal. It's not the oatmeal cream pie. It's chocolate.
Doesn't little Debbie make that one with the chocolate coating on the outside, and then it's got the two cakes, and then the whatever in the middle?
Zebra cakes.
I'm not sure.
Yes, they have that kind of stuff too, but that's not a whoopie pie. A whoopie pie is kind of like
terrible.
A whoopie pie is kind of like an Oreo on steroids, but it's soft.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a disc.
The best way to describe it, if you remember the soft Oreos they had, it's very similar to that, but bigger, and the layer of cream is usually thicker, and it's a different kind of a texture.
Does it taste like cardboard?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It tastes soft chocolate cake. So, and it can also be made in other flavors, like vanilla as well as pumpkin. I've seen them with pumpkin, pumpkin flavored cakes on them. So, and that's what I'm going to next week is the Circleville Pumpkin Show. And I'm going to have pumpkin burgers, which sounds weird, but aren't really.
Is that a burger made out of pumpkin?
Kind of, but not really. It's more akin to a Sloppy Joe, so it does have beef in it. But instead of tomato, it'll have pumpkin in there and the chili sauce. All the same kind of things you would normally put in a homemade sloppy joe, but you put the pumpkin and some pumpkin pie spice in there. So you can put a cinnamon and allspice and clove and nutmeg or some sort of mix like that. And I have had the recipe, and the Pumpkin Show website used to have a recipe category, but for some reason they've taken that part of the website off. But you can still find lots of recipes out there for those things. And then pumpkin chili, which just like what you think, but it probably does have tomato in it, but it does have some of that replaced with pumpkin.
That's a nice thing about pumpkin is it's going to end up tasting like whatever you add it to. So.
Right. Well, it's
all these pumpkin spice lattes and all that jazz. It just, it tastes like either allspice or...
That's because that's all that's in it.
Yeah.
There's no pumpkin in it for
not
real.
Not an actual pumpkin flavor.
Right. But I tried the new fall one for Starbucks this year, the Apple Crisp Macchiato. That's pretty good. I like it, but some people say the apple flavoring kind of tastes a little artificial, which I could see that. But pumpkin's just one of those flexible things. It can be sweet, it can be savory. Like pumpkin ravioli is delicious. It's pumpkin inside the ravioli. And the weirdest thing they have down there in Circleville, though, and I think they still had 2 years ago when I went, was pumpkin pizza, which if they would have did it right and made it a sweet pumpkin pizza, yeah, it would have worked. But no, they basically had the pumpkin and basically like a pumpkin pie mix, a little sugar in it. Maybe a little sugar. I don't know if it has sugar in it, but it definitely has like all the same spices a pumpkin pie has. And then they top it with mozzarella cheese, and that's just disgusting.
Ugh. It sounds disgusting. I mean, it I can see like, you know, making a slightly thinner crust and then making it into dessert style pizza.
Yes, yes. I agree. That would be wonderful, but they don't do that.
I mean, some of those dessert-style pizzas are basically an apple crisp. Those are awesome.
Yep, the apple dessert pizzas are good, yeah. And Pizza used to have that, like, back when Pizza Hut was much better than they are today, and right now they're pretty much the worst kind. They're bottom-barrel pizza. If you're ordering pizza, and that's the only place you can get, it's better than none at all. But our local Pizza Hut's up here at lunchtime. They used to do a pizza buffet, very similar to what Cece's did, but not as big. And they'd have an apple pizza on there too, and it was pretty tasty. And when I go to Pumpkin Show, though, I have one rule. I don't buy any food-related item if I can make it at home, which means I don't buy pumpkin bread because I can make that at home. It's so easy to make.
I still got that recipe for banana bread that I'm going to try out.
There you go. Banana bread is good. That's what the black bananas are for.
Bananas tend to get up and walk away in my house long before they turn brown. So I got some.
Gotta hide some.
Frozen bananas.
Well, you know what? That works too, because they get mushy after they thaw out.
Exactly.
So. My mom would always put like some walnuts or something in her banana bread, and that's the same thing. Like with pumpkin bread, I want to put like maybe some walnuts or some pecans in it. Some people like to put chocolate chips in their pumpkin bread, and I'm like, that's just not good.
I like chocolate chips in my pumpkin bread.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
I guess it depends. It depends on who makes it, because I've had people like. I bought like a loaf down at Pumpkin Show 1 year with chocolate chips in it, and not as good as the regular one, but then I have had like our Kroger's will have the like these soft pumpkin cookies with chocolate chips in them. Those are decent. They're not bad. But pumpkin is just, it's one of those things I like, and Pumpkin Show is pretty awesome. And I'm taking the whole entire week off, so we might go down a couple days. And we're going to try and go like during the week when the crowds are not near as bad. You don't want to go on Saturday. That's horrible. It's the last day, and everybody's off work. And everybody in Columbus that wants to go usually goes, so it's usually packed wall to wall. Especially after 7 o'clock at night. But, yeah.
Joe.
Who?
Joe, remember? Joe. Remember a couple months back you had recommended the use of standard notes.
Yeah.
I've been using that on a regular basis and I really dig it cuz it's across everything I have it on now.
Yep.
All my main system here, I use it in my work stuff, I use it on my phone. It's nice to just have it what I need accessible. And
don't forget your password because you will not be able to get it back.
Oh yeah, I know. I do not. I have it memorized, and I also have it in my password keeper.
Okay.
But I like it a lot. It is good stuff.
Yeah. The only thing I dislike about it is I guess they had some kind of outage or something the other day where it wasn't able to connect or sync up online on any of my machines for whatever reason, and so it kept kicking me off and not letting me use it whatsoever. Why couldn't I use the local copy?
I guess there'd be that. I didn't have that problem. I didn't notice that.
So how does it store the notes? Or is it stored in the raw text file?
No, it's all encrypted.
Oh, okay.
So it is like on their site,
right.
But it's encrypted and they have no access to it.
Right.
Supposedly.
Yeah. So just went to their website. It's available on Mac, Windows, Linux,
Android.
iOS, Android, and the web. Interesting. That's the free version, and then what's extended get you?
I don't know. I haven't paid for it.
Encrypted attachments for your notes stored directly in your Dropbox or Google Drive. Unlimited access to powerful extensions, editors, and themes. No version history up to 100 years. automated backups of your data to your email, Dropbox, OneDrive, or Google Drive. Two-factor authentication and support for our mission for privacy and longevity in software. $248 a month. Interesting.
Now, I will admit that, like, Evernote had better ways of taking notes. I mean, you could snap a picture and add it, or you could do very, like, OneNote style and just tack them all over the place. But, yeah, as a free alternative, StandardNote is pretty awesome.
Yep. Now, one thing I miss, like, I have a LiveScribe 3 pen right now, but before that I had
writing notes.
I had the Echo Wi-Fi pen that they had. The LiveScribe 3 is Bluetooth only, and the Echo was Wi-Fi. And the nice thing about that was, when you set it up, it would automatically sync your note direct to Evernote. The new one doesn't do, the LiveScribe 3 does not do that. It syncs them to its own application, which, you know, there is an Android and iOS version of it as well. The other thing, too, about the LiveScribe, any of the LiveScribe pens, they require a special notebook for writing it in. So that works, and I've liked it, but I stopped using it as much. And a coworker of mine, he uses a Rocketbook. Have you ever seen those yet?
No.
And essentially, it's a reusable. I think it's like a reusable notebook. Here we go. Rocketbook at Amazon.com. So. It's got smart. It's a smart, reusable dot grid, eco-friendly notebook. So you can digitize your note, your handwritten notes with Rocketbooks. And so you can write it, and then you can scan it, and then you just take a cloth and wipe it off and reuse it.
Where did you post a link?
I'll post one in here.
On and what, the Mumble? Let's go, man. I don't got all day. I want to see the rocket book. I could have looked it up myself, but I'm lazy.
Yes, you are. There it is.
Damn, that's a link and a half.
I know, right?
Hey, did you guys watch the space launch with William Shatner going into space?
William Shatner went into space?
Yeah, yeah. He's 90 years old.
No, I didn't see that.
The oldest person, yeah.
With a bunch of red shirts.
Yeah. It was only like 9 minutes.
It was suborbital. Yeah,
he still went into space.
True. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it just went. It was very similar to the Mercury missions. You know, so it's just a parabolic orbit. That's it.
Something like that.
Still cool.
Yep.
Good on him. Making history.
Is he 90?
He's 90. And I think, let's see. You got him.
Sean Glenn was the last old dude to go on.
Correct.
I think he was like 80 something.
Right. Yep. But you got, of the Star Trek original series cast, you have Shatner, T'Kai, Michelle Nichols, and Walter Koenig. They're the only ones left. Because, what's his face? DeForest Kelly, he passed. Leonard Nimoy passed. So did James Doohan. And I think of the people that are left, I think Shatner's the oldest. I bet you they try and set Michelle Nichols up next.
I bet she nopes.
Likely.
Alright, so this rocket book, right?
Yep.
It says no more wasting paper because it can be used endlessly by wiping clean with a damp cloth, but then a little bit farther down it says allow 15 seconds for the ink from any Pilot friction pen, marker, or highlighter to dry in order for it to bond to our specialized pages. Does that mean once it bonds, you can't wipe it off, or does it just mean it'll bond, then you can wipe it off?
I think it'll bond, and then you can wipe it off. That's what I thought. I'm willing to give it a try. I might. They're actually relatively cheap. You know.
And I guess their application is free?
I think so. Let me see. Looks like it.
So I guess you would write it and then it would bond to it and then you would wipe it off.
It looks like you scan it like if you look in the pictures for the app on the Play Store, it looks like you can also use the Rocketbook app to work with things they might have like a marker board with the markers that Rocketbook has. Which is interesting. It makes me wonder too. Now it looks like it just scans the pages in.
Yeah, it scans to an image.
Right. Which would be nicer if it could translate the handwriting, but I think sometimes the image is probably enough. It just depends on what you're taking it for. Oh, it integrates with Slack too. That's interesting.
I don't know what's the special app then if all it is just taking a picture.
That's a really good question. It's one of the things I probably do need to check it out just because this kind of stuff interests me. You know?
Yeah.
And it's worth just the, you know, and if I don't like it, it's not like I spent $20, like, because I could spend that much on just buying notebooks for my LifeScribe 3. So, which I already know I like on those. But it's just like the, like you talk about, they talk about, like, I have the Apple Pencil for my iPad, then I have on my Surface, I have the Surface Pen. And I'm debating whether if I bought another Surface device, do I want to go get the Slim Pen? Because I honestly don't use it, that the pen, that much.
Okay. I'm mistaken. Because apparently, as of November 1st, 2019, at least, this reviewer is saying, ignore older answers to this question. Here's the current 2019 answer. There is an option in the current version of the software to run OCR in the text in addition to the default JPEG or PDF. It does a good job, even on his messy handwriting. But it depends on how you use the page.
So it does translate it. Cool.
Yeah, it will do a good job if you write like a normal note and don't have like lines and everything and arrows all over the place.
Interesting. And at least it's cheaper. Like the LiveScribe, their latest pen is called the Symphony. And they have the Symphony Limited Edition, which I'm not sure which one. What's the difference between them, other than the fact that the limited edition looks pretty interesting, you know, as in fancy. You know, the other one just kind of looks like a pen. But, yeah, it uses the same app that the 3 uses. But see, it actually has the same problem my LifeScribe 3 has, in that it has a micro USB for the charge cable. I'm like, it's time to move on to USB-C. But
people really like this. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I always prefer writing my notes anyway, especially when back when it was in professional services, I definitely used that more than I do now. Because now it's most of my notes and information are either in the Confluence or Snow. They're trying to push us to use Snow knowledge base articles for a lot of things.
What's Snow? I never heard of Snow.
A ServiceNow.
Oh! Yeah, throw that's what that we shit call away. It. Get out
yeah,
of here.
Yeah, that's what we call it, yeah. That's just what we call it. I forget what version we're on, but like there's New York and Orlando and it's like just I discovered things like go into the search field in ServiceNow and you search for like a client's we have a short codes for our clients, so like Howard Community College would be HCC. Okay, so I'll look for like HCC SAML or HCC X. Okay, I'll find the case. Okay, but then I click on a link in the search list, and it does bring the case up. But then, like the tabs that you would normally get across the bottom that would allow you to open up a change request and stuff like that are missing. So then I take the case number, paste that into the search field, and hit enter. It goes right to the case again, but then those things all show up on the bottom. And it's like, it's a pain in the ass.
So is anybody keeping an eye on cryptocurrency?
I have some.
What's going on? I'm
watched
not.
Anything recently? Oh, no, it's like Shiba Inu. It's a new like meme coin. And in the last month, it has increased in value by like 500%.
Interesting.
So
I should trade some of my bitcoins over there.
five times my initial investment so far, which granted wasn't a lot, so. And I pulled out my initial investment and I still got plenty left.
I should move some, like $5 of my bitcoins over there. I got $24.92 in bitcoins.
So you're likely to see more profit out of Shiba than you are
probably Bitcoin. Let's see. I use Coinbase.
Yeah, me too. It's on there.
So did you buy it before it went up? 5,000 times?
Well, I bought some. I mean, like I said, I didn't buy a lot. So, you know, it's not like I'm getting ready to retire right now or anything. A couple more zeros drop off it and I will.
So if you bought $100 worth and it went up 5,000%.
500.
Oh, 500%. So now it's $5,000. No, $50,000.
If I had spent $100 and it had gone up 500%, I would be at $500.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, 500%, not 5,000.
Okay. I have some Shiba Inu now. That was easy. We'll see if I can make a profit off that. Right now, my portfolio balance counting my Bitcoin is $24.84. And I started.
What's
with
that like? 0.0000001 of a Bitcoin.
Yeah, pretty much.
Add a couple extra zeros.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's. When you first sign up for Coinbase, they will give you $5. Okay. And then since then, I have added every month or so, I'll just throw another $5 in. So I'll just periodically check it, you know.
Have you done any of their Learn and Earn?
I haven't done any of that yet.
I think they're at $23 right now that you can learn and earn. But it'll be different different currencies, and I guess you could just switch it over to whatever you want.
True.
After the fees, but hey.
Yeah, to me, cryptocurrencies are pretty much still a gamble yet, especially with how unstable they are. But I'm sure as heck not gonna not put, you know, I don't want to put something. I'm not going to put so much that I can't afford to lose it in there, you know. Just a little bit every once in a while,
I've told people that before, you know, treat it like you would going to the casino. Just put whatever in there that you're willing to lose. And then I told this one guy that, and this was a couple of years ago, right before that last really huge crash.
Right.
So he started investing, 2017, 2018 when it happened.
Right.
But he threw all his money in there, all his retirement, everything in there. And it went from whatever it was, $50,000 to like $500,000 or something. And then everything crashed. And just the look on that guy's face. And it's like, dude, I told you.
Yeah, he was dumb.
Don't put in more than you can lose. And then there was that guy on Robinhood where there was like a glitch or something and he lost like $75,000, and supposedly he didn't really lose it, but because of the glitch it sure looked like he lost it, and he killed himself.
So I'm just like the only way I just pull everything out is if I logged into it and then all of a sudden I saw like I had $1,000 or so in there, then I'd pull it out.
Yeah. Well, none of these crypto exchanges are exactly safe either.
No.
You know, it's right. Even if you have two-factor authentication and you have everything set up and you're extra secure, you still hear about people that, you know, followed all the rules and did everything they should have and got hacked and got all of their stuff taken.
Yep. But so, yeah, just begun dabbling in it. And right now, buying the crypto is probably the easiest way. Don't try and mine it unless you got some kick-ass hardware.
You might still be able to mine Doge. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because that was always like a hobbyist's coin, and then now all of a sudden it's actually worth something.
Right. Can you mine Shiba Inu? I don't know if you can.
I don't think so. Okay. I haven't looked into it. I'm not really worried about it. I mean, I'm not going to set up for mining again. I don't see the point.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So I'll just dabble it the way I would, you know, the stock market, if I were allowed to do anything in the stock market.
About the only way it would be worth mining it is if you can afford to get some ASICs.
Right.
And that's about it.
and you had a way to get, you know, really low-cost electricity.
Yep. Like an ant miner or something like that.
Yeah, or just some kind of, you know, graphics card farm.
Yep.
A huge rig. And then that's not a cheap initial investment at all.
No.
Especially with the price of graphics cards right now.
Even ant miners are very expensive compared to just a general use PC.
Yeah. Makes you wish you could go back in time.
Yeah.
But then if you took all the Bitcoin and you mined it all from everybody else, then it never would have gotten any value.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's fun to think, yeah, I could have put that into a hard drive and then put that hard drive into a bank, waited 10 years, and been super rich.
How much did you originally have, did you say?
True.
In Bitcoin?
Not me.
Oh, I thought you said you...
I had $24, and then I just moved $5 over into Shiba, you know.
No,
I mean...
Right.
I have no idea how much I originally had. I mean, because, you know, those faucets were a thing. Mining used to be really simple. And I played with it, and I never thought it was going to go anywhere. So, you know, I ended up formatting the hard drive and never thinking about it again until, you know, all of a sudden Bitcoin is worth like $30,000 a piece. But honestly, who wouldn't have sold when it was at like $6,000 a piece?
Yep.
What else? Getting close to closing time.
Everybody invest in Shiba Inu.
I had a question for you. What would you think? Like, I went through the Pit Boss Facebook group has really weird stuff in there sometimes. And one time I saw somebody making Chex Mix on their Pit Boss grill, so it would have a little smoky flavor to it.
Okay.
I don't know how I'd feel about that.
What temperature do they smoke it? It's got to be really low, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. Is the smoke... Well, even... I think the temperature you normally do it at in the oven is like 250.
Okay.
So I mean, really, and you could definitely get the grill up to that.
Yeah.
But and then I would probably also throw in like a smoke tube and light it up so that I get extra smoke, because once you get beyond the there is a on my pit boss there's like an S setting for smoke, and that's all the way at the lower end of the scale. So it's like we're talking probably right around 180, you know. I mean, I guess if I did it longer at the lower temperature, probably would work. But I don't know, because that's one thing down there. I also saw, now this one actually makes more sense, smoking cream cheese. That makes a little bit more sense. And then another one I saw was they take, like, you take, like, your tomatoes, tomato sauce, your chili seasoning, onions and beans and stuff, and you put that in a pot. And then the meat, like in the meat, you might take other seasonings and onions and stuff. You essentially make a big meat ball that goes on the grate over the chili pot, all right? And then you smoke that until the meat was cooked. And then you drop the meat into the chili and break it up, so the meat would have a little smoky flavor to it. That could be good, but man, I'm thinking that could also be a holy hell mess too, because it'd be dripping fat off that meatball.
How do you avoid the outside of that getting all dried out before the inside?
Yeah, goes? Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess it doesn't matter too much because, like, any of the drippings would go right into your chili pot.
Yeah, but then so the meat would be, like, all dried out.
Well, but then you put the meat in there, so it wouldn't be too bad, you know, because, I mean, it's going to have quite a bit of liquid in there. But, that's one of those things I'm not sure how one, it would be a real mess. And two, it's also, like, the same thing, I actually still have it. I have one of those beer can chicken racks for putting your chicken on. It's like, I don't know if I think I've tried it before, but I just don't know if I'd want to do that on my pit boss, you know.
But the beer can chicken?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you don't have to use beer either. Like, you can use, like, I've had some that, like, I think my dad used root beer on it before. But I don't know, but it's like, you name it, they've tried it on the Pit Boss Facebook group.
I mean, you know what? I guess it wouldn't hurt to do a batch. How long does it take to do a batch of check mix on? How long do they say to do it for?
That's a good question. I mean, I know I'd probably do if I did it right at the temp. It would be just an hour. I mean, because I do like a triple batch anyway.
Right.
So it's basically you'd stir it every 15 minutes, and then in an hour it's done. So, and the beauty of Chex Mix is even if you miss, like if your timer goes off and you don't go and stir it for another 5 minutes, it's not going to burn, you know, because it's not that high a temperature. So, but I don't know. See, because I enjoy just playing the regular traditional recipe most often. I occasionally will do like the hot and spicy one, which I know you've had. I've made that for you, Dan. You've had that before.
Yeah.
With Tabasco on it. Delicious. They have a whole bunch of recipes on their website, the Chex website.
What pit boss do you have?
I have the 850 XL. I think that's the model I have.
Is that one of the pellet ones?
Yes.
How well has that been working for you? Keep a good, like, keep the temperature consistently?
Yeah.
How much are the pellets?
I can get like for like 40 pounds for about $20.
How long do they last?
I'm on my second bag, and I bought the grill in July. So and I use it. There'll be some weeks now. It's starting to get cooler. There'll be some weeks where I don't use it, but and it gets cooler. It's gonna, because the one thing that I'll notice too is like this evening when I was doing the burgers on the grill, when I put it on there, it preheated it to 400 is where I did it for the burgers. And when I opened it, I opened it and put the burgers on, and I usually check them out at about 8 minutes. And at that point, when I went back to check it, it still hadn't gotten back up to temp. It wasn't very low. It was like maybe 380-ish, so dropped by 20 degrees. Yeah. There's ways you can curb that. Like, I need to go over to Lowe's and see if I can snag they have an insulator cover that'll go on the outside of it to help keep the temperatures up inside. But it generally does, like I said, lager smokes, I don't think keeping the temp up would be a problem, because basically it would lose, like after you preheated it, it would lose some temp after you opened it, but it wouldn't take that long to get back up to temp. So like if you're smoking something for 6 hours, it would only be below temp for maybe 20, 30 minutes at most, I think. So actually, hold on a second. I want to make sure I've told you right. No, actually, I have the Pit Boss Pro Series 2 850.
Okay.
And basically, the big difference between that one and some of the older ones is mine does. Some of them have like a window in the front of the box that holds the pellets, so you can actually see how many you got in there. Mine doesn't have that. Mine does have like this little fold out section right in front, so you can fold it out and use that to like put stuff on while you're like say you were putting different spices on whatever you're cooking. Once you flipped it, you can put your spices there while you're doing that. But I haven't actually tried truly smoking anything on it yet, because this one is a grill first and a smoker second. So the best way on the ones that are grill first is to you get a smoke tube, and the tube's probably about $20 or so. I got a Chinese one off of Amazon for between 10 and 20. I think I forget what exactly I paid for it, but then you just take that and you fill that full of some pellets, and then you just light it with like a torch, and then you throw that on there, and it'll pump out smoke while you're cooking at the higher temperature too. Because like if you're smoking like a pork, like a butt or something, with the pellet grill, you're not going to get a whole lot of smoke, because you need to smoke that, or you need to cook that pork at a higher temperature. You know, because trichinosis is a thing. you know, you want to have that cook pork while cooked. So, and I'm not saying that there's actually worms in commercially bought pork. It's just, it's never bad. It's never a good idea to serve pork that's not fully cooked.
Sous vide that sucker for a couple hours. 145 degrees. You get yourself some really tender, slippery pork. Woo! It feels wrong to eat it that way, but it tastes good if you like slippery pork.
Slippery pork.
Slippery pork. Should call this episode Slippery Pork.
In.
Yeah. Oh, we gotta start wrapping this up soon.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Quit yawning, man. I'm gonna have to get going.
Yeah. And that's gonna be it for this week.
Ay ay ay. Busy week at work this week.
Yes.
You too, Joe.
Every week. Every week.
I gotta build a new environment. And then also, we're got to meet with one of my coworkers. We're doing a. Does your team ever do like chaos engineering events?
You mean like randomly breaking stuff and all that?
Yeah.
We've done that before. We haven't done it in a while.
Yeah, we're doing that again Friday. So since I think I am gonna masquerade as a. I don't know if I'm the manager or the client in the one that I'm going to be working on. The other one I think is already set up. We're actually using one of our non-prod environments for one of our client non-prod environments to test this out because we've been having quite a few incidents where the problem was actually DNS, and it took our team longer to figure those out because our team doesn't do network stuff as much. So I think that's going to be one of the bugs, and I don't know what ours is going to be yet, so we got to come up with that. But then the whole week before that has been chaos anyway. So yeah, I am looking forward to next week being off work.
All right.
We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, we'll have see you in a week. Here are your promos. Enjoy it. Stay safe.
Happy I am short.
Sure. Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
My name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Hmm. Alrighty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, any of you guys got your booster yet?
They're not giving boosters to me yet.
Okay. Haven't tried yet, but and nobody said that you have to get them yet either, so
alright. I'm gonna stop recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Good night, Joel.
Oh, there's a turn, like a right angle turn. There's no street there, it's just a turn. It's like they followed the cow or something.
Right. This is episode 926. How you doing, Pat?
What's
happening? Man, did you hear about that principal? Was it Ontario, Canada? Who they wanted removed because she was an Iron Maiden fan?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That was horrible. Saying she's a bad influence on the kids.
Yeah. What's going on here?
All right. Oof.
Uh-huh. Well, my car just bombed low gas. That means I don't go anywhere else until I stop at a gas station.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. What's going on there? We got him. Oh.
Yeah, it's a good thing I don't have a late night tonight, because I got an email from Spectrum that says you're going to have internet service delays from 12 until 6 in the morning.
Why is that?
I guess they're doing upgrades. I'm sure why. At least UPS delivered on the first try with a package I had to be delivered today.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, what I got?
What'd you get?
Some Kinder Buenos. Candy.
What are those?
It's like chocolate in like a hazelnut filling. Pretty tasty. I can get them at the store, but somebody gave me like a $5 gift card, and I just added $7 to it and ordered it on Amazon. All right, I'm gonna drop off. I'm just pulling in the driveway.
All right, be
there in a minute or two.
Alright, we should get this going. Then Joel can come back in and tell us the truth, right, Joe?
Sure.
Alright. How's the weather down there?
Humid. Threatening tornadoes.
Oh, that's nice. How's the weather up there, Pat? They got him.
It's been overcast. It's nice for October.
Yeah. That's why it's been here. It's a little overcast, a little windy, a little rainy.
It's pretty mild for October so far. I'm not complaining. Open the windows. No air, no heat. I'm good.
Yeah. All right.